Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made. You're listening to the Oz Movies Podcast, only on the Oz Network.
It is the Oz Network coming to you today for the last episode ever of the Oscars. We've cancelled them. Brendan Fraser isn't nominated this year anymore, so they're not a thing. Screw them. Screw the Oscars.
We're going to slap Chris Rock. Exactly. That's how angry we are.
I wonder if he's ever going to be brought back as a presenter or is he just going to have traumatic experiences. I think what they do is the year that Will Smith is eligible to attend the Oscars, get him to present it and then get Chris Rock to slap him and then everything will just come full circle.
Yeah.
You know, just saying, funny. But we are here not to laugh because we're watching Oppenheimer. close out the last of our 10 Best Picture nominations. We'll also give our predictions today. The movie that's been nominated for them all, the movie that's probably going to win them all, a movie that we saw like, what, 6 months ago, 8 months ago? That was a long time ago, Barbenheimer, remember that? And we're here to talk about it again because I think since we saw it last, we started watching it and we just finished watching it. That's how long it takes to watch. My name is Ben and explosions. I probably did the same one 8 months ago. I can't. There's not many quotes in this movie.
I have the same thought, so all I could think of is my name is Colin and bring in the sheets.
different meanings for some different people. So we did this movie like 8 months ago, so I feel there's not a whole lot extra to add on it. What we did, we'll get to our predictions shortly, but we touched on a bit yesterday. I think rewatching it adds a little bit to it. I mean, this is a big screen movie, I feel like. This is the experience, and we'll always be part of seeing that and on the big screen. I mean, most Christopher Nolan ones are. It's better than Tenet. I think we all agreed on that last year. Is this the film that deserves to break Christopher Nolan's duck and win Oscars and bring him all the accolades? Maybe. I mean, it's a very well put together film. I think when I'm watching this yesterday, I'm like appreciating it more for the fact that it's got nominated for so many Oscars. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see it. Like, this is deserving of a lot of love. Cillian Murphy is great. Is he the best actor this year? Maybe. I mean, this is a 3-hour movie basically carrying him. So, I mean, you know, he's got a lot to do. And I still think there's like the bomb scene is still epic to watch. There's some great stuff that's epic to watch, but it's just too long. And it's like shifts in tone a lot. Like it's kind of like, oh, it's a political drama. Now it's a big bomb movie. Now it's back to being political drama. And oh, there's Gary Oldman. And then now it's back to being about that thing that Einstein said at the beginning. So, yeah, I don't know if my opinions have fully changed on it. I enjoy it. Is it a brilliant film? Yeah. Is it the most amazing film I watched this year? No.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes with my opinion. The one thing I will say is that watching this on a TV, it takes some things away from it. It's not the same visually as we got on the big screen, but I don't necessarily want to fault a movie for that because a lot of the other things we're watching, we weren't watching Poor Things. We did watch Poor Things on the big screen. We forgot about that.
Oh, the first row. It was amazing.
But like a lot of these other ones, you know, we're only getting to see it on TV. And it's like, I don't want to fault Oppenheimer because it was better on a big screen. But the one thing I will say is that seeing this on a TV and not in a theater, it allowed me to focus more on the story. And I found like the story flowed better than I remembered it flowing. I still have the same complaint that, like you were saying, this movie doesn't need to be 3 hours long. The first hour, there's a lot of stuff you could have cut from it. But also knowing this entire story, knowing where they're going to go with it, a lot of those scenes that initially the first time around, I'm like, I don't know if we really need to see this. Like, I appreciate it a little bit more. Like some of the stuff where, you know, he's first getting in or back to America, and you know, with Josh Hartnett and everybody. When you see a lot of the stuff that comes up with the political stuff later on, or you know that's where the story is going to go, it was easier to take it. Still, like Killers of the Flower Moon, like Poor Things, like a lot of these movies, could you have cut this stuff and sacrificed anything for the movie? You probably wouldn't have sacrificed much, you know?
Mm.
It's not that it's bad, though. But what I did find interesting watching it this time around was my appreciation for Cillian Murphy's performance, which I think I thought he was great the first time I saw it. I think that similar to Emma Stone with Poor Things, where it's like, how is a human being capable of doing a performance like this? It's not necessarily, is this the greatest performance Cillian Murphy's ever had? Is it the greatest performance we've ever seen from a Christopher Nolan movie? But how did a human being perform a movie of this size with this much to do, not lose character, create a captivating character in a biopic, which, you know, my feelings on biopics, a lot of that has to go to the writing as well. I mean, I'm almost fully backing Cillian Murphy as like my favorite going into the Oscars tomorrow.
I mean, he's going to win it. 100% he's going to win it. We know really? That. Well, like, I bet good money on him winning it. I think that he, of all the acting ones, he's the firm lock, isn't he? I think that, like, of all the other ones, like, oh, will, you know, Lily Gladstone hang on? Devine, will she hang on? Maybe this and Robert Downey Jr. are the only two that I feel have kind of fully, not swept them, but they've done quite a close job to that. But yeah, like, I agree with everything you say. Like, it's, this is one that, like, when I'm watching it, like, I definitely, I appreciate the story a lot more. But then at the same time, I think it was one where there were definitely portions of this film where I may be on my phone for a bit longer or I'm doing something else because you've seen it, so you know what's happening.
Yeah.
But, like, I definitely think that a lot of the tension around the bomb, because, like, when you're seeing this in the cinema, you're like, oh, show the bomb already. Like, I'm seeing this on IMAX. I want to see, like, an explosion. And then the thing is, after the explosion, there's like a whole other hour that's after it. Like, I mean, yeah. It's, you know, but like, it's still all the elements to it that, like, I think, and there was a lot of things that I forgot about the storyline. I thought, honestly, I thought it was a lot more of a complex storyline than I remembered. So then I watched it and was like, oh, this isn't too complex. Ben can understand this. But like, I don't, like, I think I saw a few more things about, Oppenheimer afterwards, like the man himself. But like, I don't know, is he renowned for having any form of personality? Like, is this kind of like a, and I'm not meaning that meanly, like, it's like when we talked about First Man a few years ago, how, like, how do you make a movie out of Neil Armstrong, who's, you know, a pretty boring human being? Like, I mean, is Oppenheimer kind of like that? And if he is, then Cillian, Mr. Murphy, has done a very good job. He's not Mr. Personality, but still, like, much better actor at getting something interesting out of a man than Ryan Gosling did with Neil Armstrong a few years ago. Let's just point that out, because you and I think we're both disappointed with what happened in that film, or a movie that we probably should have liked more than this. And I completely forget that First Man's a movie. Never even bothered to rewatch that. But if you know what I'm trying to say, like, I mean, I think that, like, he does a good job at making someone who probably was not the most interesting man alive quite engaging and interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his performance is captivating.
Yeah.
And that's probably an overused word, but it totally suits this. Like, you can't really take your eyes off of him. When he says things, you're fully tuned into everything he's saying, even if it is boring science stuff, you know? And there's a tension to his performance that I think this movie, a lot of people wouldn't quite necessarily understand the tension behind this. And this is where I also want to, you know, give some credit to the script. Because there are some very smart moments in this where they build tension out of something that nowadays people are going to look back and say, well, they built a bomb. Everybody's got these bombs nowadays. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but at this time, they didn't know if this was going to work. And it was also who's going to build it before they do. To me, some of the best stuff in this movie are things that they don't even spend that much time on, which is whether we should actually use this bomb. And I know we did talk about this back when the original review came out back in July. You know, should we just use the threat of this bomb and see if the Japanese stand down, you know? And it reminded me a lot of All Quiet on the Western Front. What was that last year?
Mm.
Where you had the flip side of this, where they're saying, hey, if we drop one bomb, we're going to kill tens of thousands, but we might save hundreds of thousands in the process. As opposed to All Quiet on the Western Front, where it's like, we can let everybody walk away right now, but no, we're going to kill a few more just because we can, because we want the bragging rights or whatever. So it was very different take on it. The other thing that I found similarities to was, and it was really just one moment in this movie, was Zone of Interest. When we were talking about how great it was in Zone of Interest, that you just had this cold indifference among the characters doing the most unspeakable thing imaginable. And, you know, whether this movie doesn't really take a stance one way or the other, it's like, should they have actually dropped the bomb or not? But they still pose that moral question of, is this okay? And you have that moment where the one guy who's deciding is saying, I'm crossing Kyoto off the list because my wife and I had a lovely vacation there. It has that same coldness and difference, but you get that reaction from the other characters, like, seriously? Like, and that's so much of this, both in the script and in Cillian Murphy's performance, you get this tension that just keeps building throughout the movie just by watching a guy do stuff that's really nothing more than drawing diagrams on chalkboard half the time.
And I think it's that level of, yeah, like, you get this mind and what's unique about the Oppenheimer character, and the man is just, you know, brilliant mind and everything, that then goes into this whole bit at the end, which is like, you know, should we have done this? And like the closing bit when you finally get revealed what he said to Einstein and kind of, you know, the whole thing around that. Like, it's just, it's very unique because, again, we live in a world where this has been the norm for, what, 80 years. You know, we live in a nuclear world where tomorrow we could all be annihilated by these bombs. But in history, we've only ever seen two of them dropped. And of course, there were going to be these questions back then about should we be doing it. And like in hindsight, like, you know, America, for all the power we have, we love you, our overlords. But like, I mean, they are the only country to have ever dropped nuclear bombs on another country. We've never seen this repeated for obvious reasons. And again, essentially, they are the bully who did this and still are. So, and but we live in this world because of what these men discovered, and one woman, I guess, you know, worked on this bomb.
There's feminism in this movie.
There's like three women characters in this film. one of them got nominated for an Oscar. So, you know.
And not the one who was nude for 50% of the time.
Well, the beauty about watching this film this time around is I got to fully appreciate both Florence Pugh and Cillian Murphy naked. I didn't have people walking in front of me asking me, is this Barbie? I'm like, there's Florence Pugh's boobs. No, it's not Barbie. Piss off and move. So I could appreciate that a little bit more now this time around. And Cillian Murphy, not just Florence Pugh. He's got very nice nipples as well. But yeah, it's just, it's interesting. And like, I know we, like, you know, isn't it funny? Like when we watched Tenet a few years ago, I don't think we were very negative at the time on Tenet. We were just like, it's fine. I think we were just happy to go and see a movie on the big screen at the time. Like, oh, shiny new things. Now in hindsight, we're like, fucking Tenet sucked. The IMAX just reopened here in Sydney, and all they're showing at the moment is Tenet and June 2. And I'm like, oh, show something good. I haven't seen June 2.
You'd like Dune. You would like the first Dune.
No, I'm fine. But yeah, like it's sort of just interesting that, like, I mean, Christopher Nolan, I think, is one of these ones. Like, well, I've talked about Bradley Cooper this last 10 days, and we talked about Mark Ruffalo, people who are deserving of an Oscar. I mean, Christopher Nolan is kind of the modern day director who will sell a movie based on his name. Like, I mean, you could have put Colin Hilding as Oppenheimer, Ben Waterworth as Robert Downey Jr.'s character in this film, and no one's going to give a shit because it's a Christopher Nolan film. And that's
Noah Groves and his nipples as Florence Pugh.
But like you could put anyone in this movie and people are still going to say it. This has got a pretty decent cast, but like they're not like, and no disrespect to the great Cillian Murphy, but I wouldn't argue he's like, you know, Brad Pitt level or Leonardo DiCaprio level of A-lister. So like even the people you've got in this in a stacked cast, I would argue that Matt Damon and Robert Downey Jr. are the biggest names in this, because even the smaller, like, yeah, you've got Gary Oldman, but he's never, he's kind of almost a cameo that's never billed in this movie. Emily Blunt.
I don't even think we knew he was going to be in it going in.
Yeah,
we
blew our mind. I mean, I always forget Rami Malek's in this movie. Like, oh, there's Rami Malek. Yeah. And like for a lot of it, like he doesn't speak. You know, and then you got other like people like Casey Affleck, Academy Award winner, Josh Hartnett. You know,
not David Krumholtz.
David Krumholtz.
Bernard.
Kenneth Brenner. Like, I mean, like, you've got esteemed actors in this film that are just kind of, like, popping up every now and then. But my point is, Matt Damon, of course, my point is that, you know, this is a movie carried by the director, and this is the film that is going to be, like, that breakthrough. Because wasn't that with Spielberg? It wasn't until Schindler's List that he finally got his Oscar.
Yeah.
So, like, this is kind of Christopher Nolan, who's had a, what, nearly 20-year career of producing movies of Oscar-worthy performances and technical ability and everything. And this is finally going to be the one that looks like it will break through for Best Picture and, most importantly for him, Best Director.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about that coming in. I'm like, well, everybody's talking about Spielberg and Scorsese. Like, it took Spielberg until Schindler's List. It took Scorsese till The Departed. Nolan could do it sooner than they did, but it feels like it's longer because Nolan has been that guy where he's not just making the big movies, he's making the big movies that people are loving and saying the whole reason we have 10 Best Picture nominations is because of The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, it would have been nominated, but it was a superhero movie.
Should have been.
Yeah, it should have been. Now, when I look back on his filmography, you know, Memento should have been nominated for Best Picture. Batman Begins should have been. Prestige, Dark Knight. Inception, maybe. Dunkirk, absolutely.
Didn't Inception get the majority nominated? No.
Except they expand it to 10, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, all of those movies are movies that were all deserving of the same spot Oppenheimer's getting. Where I would rank Oppenheimer among these movies, I wouldn't rank it as high as The Prestige. I wouldn't rank it as high as Batman Begins or Dark Knight.
Yeah, great.
I probably wouldn't. I think Dunkirk might be like the one that he really deserved for. Like, if you look back on Spielberg recently said Schindler's List is the movie he's most proud of. I think most people will look back and say if Spielberg was going to win for anything, they're glad it was Schindler's List. Departed, great movie, not nearly as good as the original Chinese film it's based on. I don't think most people look back and say, well, Scorsese's best movie was The Departed. Oppenheimer might be like Scorsese's Departed. You know, most people will probably say Dunkirk or The Prestige or The Dark Knight are like the best ones. Now, having said that, I'm glad that Christopher Nolan is still making quality movies more than 20 years into his career.
Mm.
And he even had an interview recently where he came out and said, are you going to go back to doing small movies like Memento ever again? And he said, why would I? So many directors dream of being able to have unlimited budgets. And who would have ever thought we would have a, you know, $200 million blockbuster about J. Robert Oppenheimer?
And I actually remember when this movie was announced. And, like, I'll be honest with you, I didn't really know a lot about Mr. Oppenheimer. You know, I knew there was a nuclear bomb. I've heard of the Manhattan Project, but could I tell you how it was created? Absolutely not. So when it was the need, and even I was like, oh, okay. But even, like, I haven't seen everything Christopher Nolan's ever done, but even I'm someone who, whenever he does a movie, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll see it. Like, I mean, Tenet. Yeah. Obviously, again, there was a variety of circumstances why we went and saw that movie. But even if we lived in normal times back then, I probably still would have gone and seen it. Dunkirk, yeah, I completely forgot that was him. And we saw that in the movies. Like, that was the new Christopher Nolan film. Let's go see that. And Dunkirk, probably not a film that I would go out of my way to see if that wasn't a Christopher Nolan film. And yeah, like, I think Dunkirk was a brilliant. What year was that? What won? Was that the Fish Out of Water year that won?
I think it was. Yeah, 2017.
Yeah. And that was a great film. But yeah, like, I would say of the ones that I have seen of Christopher Nolan, I mean, I think most people would agree that in considering that we're living in a year that Barbie gets nominated for best, I mean, Dark Knight should have won. Like, I mean, not even nominated, should have won. What won? What was 2008, right? 2008, 2009?
Yeah, I'm actually curious now to go back.
Because I remember, like, obviously Heath Ledger winning, but like, what was it? What won the Oscar that year?
I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen The Prestige, but like, The Prestige has developed that reputation among people where like, it might be his best movie, but yet that was the one
Slumdog Millionaire won that year.
For the year of, you're right, it did. Yeah.
I mean, Slumdog Millionaire is a great movie. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, Dark Knight's better.
You've got Benjamin Button in there. Frost Nixon, Milk, The Reader. Honestly, Slumdog Millionaire and Frost Nixon are the only ones that I would actually say really deserved a nomination. You didn't even nominate The Dark Knight, but and then go back a couple years prior to that, The Prestige, which, like I said, is like, that's the movie where most people are like, his greatest movie, and I don't think got any nominations. That was the year of Scorsese winning for The Departed. But I mean, you know, will Oppenheimer stand the test of time? I'm actually kind of impressed that now, what, 7-8 months later, there are still people who are like, this was such an incredible experience and appreciating the movie, that it might be one that actually does stand the test of time more than, you know, some of these other ones we're talking about.
Definitely Tenet. I mean, look, I think at the end of the day, like, yeah. I mean, like, you know, we talked a lot this period about how, like, yeah, like, give the big blockbuster popular movie awards if it's worthy. You know, obviously that's what people are saying about Barbie. Now, again, I'm not doing this to rip into Barbie. I personally don't think Barbie is a Best Picture worthy nominated film. Oppenheimer is, and Oppenheimer was what, third biggest box office movie of the year last year, so behind Barbie and behind Super Mario Brothers. So like, you can still have big blockbuster movies that are Academy Award worthy. We've seen that. I mean, Lord of the Rings is a classic example of that. I mean, I was only very young when that won all the Oscars in like 2003. I was 16, not very young, but I was still young. And I don't think at the time, like, because again, I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings fan, but at the time I'm going like, oh, I didn't realize like movies like that could win Oscars. Even Titanic in hindsight, like, I mean, again, the biggest movie in the world ever until Avatar, that swept the Oscars with 11 wins.
Yeah.
This, I mean, looking here, and we'll switch into the awards, nominated for 13, favorite to win 9 of them. It would be interesting to see if it can match the magical 11 or get to the magical 12. We've never seen a film win 12. Should this be the movie that does it? Maybe. I mean, again, I've never seen Return of the King. I don't know if that's the best of all three of them or if that was just...
It's not.
Was that just awarded it because, you know, that made up for the previous 2 years? You hear that, but...
Pretty much.
I know you don't like Titanic, but I fully think it's worthy of 11 Academy Awards. I've never seen Ben-Hur. So, you know, it's interesting to see whether this can join those categories. Because again, like as you said, this stands a test of time, I think, no matter how many it wins. But if this wins 9 Oscars, 10 Oscars, 11 Oscars, 12 Oscars, like it's going to be forever talked about in the annals of history, right? Because Titanic, in retrospect, has, you know, been, you know, given different reviews over the years, but it's still always going to be that film that won 11 Oscars. Ben-Hur is always going to be that film that won 11 Oscars. Return of the King. That, so, like, this could be in that list, well, based purely on that as well.
Yeah, I think one of the other things is, I mean, Titanic, it was going to clean up in all the technical awards, but 1997 was, like, maybe the most competitive year ever. I mean, that was the year where Best Picture alone, you had Titanic, you had LA Confidential. LA Confidential is kind of that other one that people are like, well, that's a classic that maybe should have won. But then you had Good Will Hunting. You had As Good As It Gets, you know? I don't even remember what the fourth one was, but like that, I think the Full Monty was the other one. Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, those are all movies that had real shots. I don't feel like there's any other movie this year that has a shot, but I will say for all the technical awards, the competition's not quite that stacked against Oppenheimer, you know? So Oppenheimer could very well, it's going to win more than any movie within what, the last decade? Because it's been so long since we had the 1 year where I think it was a movie Coda that won Best Picture, a severely overrated movie. But that, it was one of only two awards it won, and it won Best Picture. And, you know, and that's happening too often. So I want to get back to, if a movie's the best movie of the year, it really should be sweeping more than just 2-3 categories.
Well, we haven't had, like, it's very rare, wasn't it, since Silence of the Lambs, where we've had a movie win, like, what?
The five majors.
I mean, even looking here, I'm trying to see, like, I'm sure there's some movies that have won, like, 10, 9 Oscars, but I knew there was a film a few years ago that got, I think, broke the record for most nominations, and it was La La Land, 17.
That is a horrible movie.
Never seen it. I have no interest in seeing it. It's made Colin vomit. But they got nominated for 17, but only won 6. I mean, Titanic got nominated for 17, only won 11. So, I mean, obviously going into this, what, 13 for Oppenheimer. So, you know, it's got a good strike rate. But, like, yeah, it's been pretty much, it can't win the big five because it didn't get Best Actress nomination. So, yeah, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, Best Supporting Actor. I said Best Actress, didn't get nominated for one, Ben. Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Original Score, Best Sound, Best Production Design, Best Cinematography, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Film Editing, and Best Costume Design. Now, it is favorite, according, again, to Gold Derby, or Derby, however you want to pronounce it, it is favorite to win Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Film Editing, Best Score, and Best Sound, which I think on paper, and we're going to do our predictions in a second, I think we're all going to be on the same page at Best Sound, Best Score, and Best Film Editing, it will win, yeah. And probably Best Cinematography, it will also probably win. Yeah, I think Adapted Screenplay, yep. Supporting Actor, yep. Best Actor, yep. Director, yep. Best Picture, yep. I mean, there's at least 7 of these are a lock. So, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that. We'll get to our predictions. But, I mean, even the ones where it's not favorite, I mean, Emily Blunt's second favorite. So, you know, she's up there. Costume Design is a bit down, 4th, which, yeah, probably if any of them, you're like, yeah, probably doesn't, you know, Barbie's going to win that. Even Poor Things and Killer of the Flower Moons, which are above it, you're like, yeah, you know, costume-wise, they stood out a little bit more. And Best Makeup and Hairstyling, yeah, probably not up there. Best Production Design, 3rd favorite, though. So, yeah, I don't know what you got to add on anything that I'm just rambling on about there. It's not nominated for Best Animated Feature. I thought it was robbed for that one.
Oh, and there's no original song in there? I'm just Oppie. I'm just Oppie.
I'm just Oppie. If anyone else, I'd be Einstein.
I mean, do you want to do our rankings before we do their predictions?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if you had anything to add on any of those nominations before I moved into that. So,
No, I mean, we'll cover it in a second. I'll go first, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. Colin, please be my guest.
Thank you. Because Noah has to go last. Privilege of not being on the show ever.
He fulfilled his quota.
He was here twice this year. But yeah, I'm still gonna buy this movie. And as far as my rankings go, I actually kind of surprised myself because I assumed my opinions in this were very similar to Killers of the Flower Moon, very similar to Poor Things, very similar to Barbie. And I assumed, oh, that means it's going to be on my lower half. I'm going to have this rank fifth overall, but that kind of just shows how strong those top four are for me because everything else is kind of like in a dead heat. Like this will be, so my number one's Anatomy of a Fall, easily, nothing else even close. Holdover is number two, American Fiction three, and Past Lives number four. But then I'm basically going to have Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, Zone of Interest, Poor Things, and then there's Barbie, and then there's Maestro.
So yeah, things third last. Aww.
Third last. But at the same time, five, six, seven, and eight, they're almost interchangeable. You know, it's I would take Oppenheimer over Poor Things, Zone of Interest, or Killers of the Flower Moon because it has that rewatchability about it. It has Cillian Murphy in it, which I think it's maybe one of the best performances I've seen. But it's that top four just. What's really weird is I went back and looked at what my top 10 was at the end of last year. And I assumed at the end of last year, I haven't seen a lot of these.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to breathe either. Yep. I haven't seen a lot of these other Best Picture nominated movies. So I'm going to assume it's on there. Past Lives made number 9 on my year end list. And it's one of four movies that are nominated this year that I'm actually feeling very strongly about. The other ones didn't make my top 10 list, and none of those that I've seen have actually bumped up any higher. So, yeah, Anatomy of a Fall, Holdovers, American Fiction, and Past Lives, those are like the big four for me.
It's interesting you say that, because I think my top four are probably exactly the same, like not the same movies, but I would have the same feelings about it. And this, again, I feel we say this every year. I wasn't doing this for about 2 years, so I don't know how those years compare, but I feel we've not had a super weak year. But, like, I mean, you know, there's only really, to me this year, I mean, I've only binned two of these this year. I think last year maybe only binned one. I can't remember what that was. But anyway, Women Talking, that's what it was. I'm putting Oppenheimer, and I feel this is very low for the movie that's going to win Best Picture, but this isn't me disliking this film completely. It's just more that six others above it. I was at seventh. And it's just because I like six others better. So I've got this just below Anatomy of a Fall and just above Killers of the Flower Moon. So that means my final 10 is The Holdovers number one, American Fiction number two. I think if we did obviously our universal rankings where we combine the averages, and they're the top two films from all of us, because you and Noah both have them at 2 and 3, if I'm not mistaken. I've got them at 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. I think me and Noah have the exact same top four, because when he read his top four, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's mine.
Three, I've got Poor Things. I loved it. Zone of Interest, I've got it number four. Just fascinated by that film. Past Lives, five. Anatomy of a Fall, six. And again, that's not disrespecting you two having that at number one. I can see it worthily at number one. Again, it's the Parasite of this year. I just didn't get it out of as much as you two did. Oppenheimer, seven. Killers of the Flower Moon, eight. Maestro, nine. And Barbie, 10. That's my 10. And do we
want... Maestro should not be higher than anything on this list.
It's better than Barbie. Do you want to read Noah's, or do you want me to read Noah's?
You read Noah's. I didn't pull it up.
That's what she said. So he watched Poor Things. So basically, if you remember his rankings the other day, he ended up putting Poor Things at sixth. So overall, Maestro 10, Zone of Interest 9, Killers of Flower Moon 8, Oppenheimer 7. So we have a match for Oppenheimer. There you go. Poor Things 6, Barbie 5, Past Lives 4, American Fiction 3, The Holdovers 2, Anatomy of a Fall. So if you're listening to this and you're the Oz Network Academy, The Holdovers, you are the Best Picture winner. Congratulations.
Yeah.
But it's whether or not what we think versus what will happen, which will now get into our predictions, which just quickly, off the top of your head, how would you compare to other years we've done the Oscars? I mean, I think off the top of my head from last year, like what we had, like Triangle of Sadness. We had obviously Top Gun last year.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah. Like
Elvis.
Yeah. I mean, comparable. I think like, on level of movies that you'd want to watch again. I mean, I've not watched Everything Everywhere All at Once again. I would. Elvis, yes. Top Gun, yes. Triangle Sadness, yes. I feel there's another obvious one that I'm missing that was very enjoyable last year that I wasn't expecting to like.
I liked Women Talking. didn't.
No, don't get me started on Women Talking. let me pull that up there this year. Oh, where am I looking at here? This is like 2000. And what year am I looking at there? That's not the right year. I'm like, hang on a minute, Brokeback Mountain.
All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, Banshees of Inisherin.
Banshees of Ed Sheeran, that was it.
And Fablemans and Tar, those were decent.
So comparable, because I mean, I think I'd say that I've got two bins this year, whereas last year from memory, I only binned Women Talk. I don't think I binned Avatar. I think I probably low rented that. And I wouldn't have binned anything else. So technically last year is probably just ahead based on the overall, what I ranked them, but, yeah, similar.
Yeah. It's no Brendan Fraser mostly on this level. I'll say that, I feel slightly stronger about my top four movies this year than I did last year. Just as a whole. But I feel much stronger about my top two movies from last year than I do this year. And I felt more indifferent on my like 5, 6, 7, and 8 last year than I do this year, where there's really only the two movies that I wasn't like 100% crazy about.
Yeah. And I'd say with Maestro, I very nearly low rented it. So, you know, I obviously didn't hate that as much as you guys did, but anyway,
you're an idiot.
I am an idiot. You liked Barbie. So you're an idiot.
I just want to put it on record though, that when I'm pretty sure when, we asked Noah about Zone of Interest, he said what Zone of No Interest, he said, Colin might like it, Ben, you'll hate it. And what ended up happening, I liked it a little bit more than Noah, and Ben ended up loving it.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't know me, Noah Groves. So let's go over our predictions. As always, we should have got Noah to do this, but screw him. He's had enough on this show for 2024. So basically, we just pick a winner in each category, and the winner is the person with points. Now, last year we actually did a reaction episode. This year we're not. So let's just pretend that we know who wins this, and maybe we'll bring it up in whatever episode we record next, which I think is Ghostbusters, and that will technically air before the end of these. So that will make a lot of sense. Now, do we want to go from bottom to top via Wikipedia or Gold Derby? What do you got?
Let's
open?
Let's go Gold Derby.
Because you're looking at the ratings. All right. So best live action short, my favorite category of the year. So nominated, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, The After, Red, White, and Blue, Invincible, Night of Fortune. Now, I have no idea what any of these are about. I'm guessing one's about a guy called Henry Sugar and his wonderful life. Red, White, and Blue sounds American. Invincible, wasn't that a Matt Damon movie? That was Invictus, Ben. Wasn't there a movie called Invincible as well?
That was Mark Wahlberg.
I like that one. Are we allowed to cheat and look what they're about, or do we just have to choose one out of nowhere?
Just choose it out of nowhere.
You're just looking at the
I know
ratings.
Which one it is. No, I actually know one of these.
Well, I mean, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar is the overwhelming favorite, so I feel I'm going to go with that because it's not even a close one. That's got 4,866 top choices as number one versus 174 for second. So this one's shitting it in.
Yeah, that's also, if you're familiar with Wes Anderson, this was the other director you said we're going to remember who we're
Wes
talking
Anderson.
About.
Wes Anderson, there no, you go, ding.
We're talking about Wes Anderson, yeah, which he had a movie last year, Asteroid City, which got no love, though it wasn't a great movie, it wasn't a terrible movie, but this is a short film he made, and it's got Benedict Cumberbatch in it. So,
and
I mean,
Ralph Fiennes.
It's everything.
Dev Patel.
The Oscars love everything involved with this movie, so they don't even have to watch it and they're going to give it the win.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. So hang on. What are we up to? I've got to write this down, Ben. Best live action short. Where have I got there? Live action short. So WSHS. WSHS. All right, cool. Next one. Best documentary short. The ABCs of Book Banning, The Last Repair Shop, Na Na and Wei Po, The Barber of Little Rock, and Island in Between. This is another one where it's just dominated by one. And because I'm reading these in order of favorite to least favorite. ABC's A Book Banning looks like it is the overwhelming favorite. So I'm going to go first, and I'm going to go with that one.
I'm going to go with you because often I try in these categories where I have no knowledge to separate myself, but I'm not going to be that foolish this time.
I don't like giving you access to this year. I usually have an advantage. This one looks slightly closer. Best animated short, Letter to a Pig. War is over! Inspired by the music of John and Yoko, 95 Senses, Pachydermy, and Our Uniform.
Pachydermy.
You can guess first here.
I'm going to go with just at random 95 Senses.
Aww.
Because that's 90 more than I have, and that sounds impressive.
Again, I feel like I should just go for the favorite since you went for the third favorite, but I'm going to go for the second favorite because I feel war is over! I mean, Imagine and John and all that kind of get such a wank.
Everyone loves Yoko, right?
Exactly. She's never done anything wrong. So, and plus, it's in capitals. So I'm going for war is over. And I don't think any of us are probably going to get a point there. Never mind. All right. Best international film, Zone of Interest will win. Anything else?
I just want to add Society of a Snow in that. That movie is probably the closest you can get to it. You'd actually really like the movie. First of all, it's the director of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. And it's a movie about like the plane crash in the Andes, like a soccer team. Mm-hmm. I watched it. I mean,
ate each other.
Not a brilliant movie, but really heavy movie, really well-made movie, very intense movie. Definitely something you should check out.
Some. Didn't they already make a movie of that?
That was Alive, which was a story about another soccer team crashing in the mountains, eating themselves.
How many soccer teams crash and eat themselves?
Look, there's only one thing you could do. I mean...
Maybe, but no. Okay, Zone of Interest, Side of Snow, Teacher's Lounge, Perfect Days, Lo Capitano. Zone of Interest will win this. It's the only one that got nominated for Best Picture, so 100% will win that. Documentary feature, 20 Days in Mariupol, Four Daughters, The Eternal Memory, Bobby Wine, The People's President, and To Kill a Tiger.
What is Bobby Wine, the people's president?
He's a man who was the president and he was the people's president. I don't know.
Ugandan opposition leader, activist, and musical star Bobby Wine. This guy sounds great.
Good for Bobby.
This is one of these ones where I almost want to take a left field choice here. I'm going to go with Bobby Wine, people's president.
Bobby Wine. I'm not. I'm sticking with the overwhelming favorite in this one, which is 20 Days in Mariupol. I mean, it's, again, when you look at the discrepancy and how far ahead it is of number two, I think that's one to go with. This one is a tight one because looking the top two are very close. Best animated feature, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, and Robot Dream. So Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is favorite just above The Boy and the Heron. I've never heard of The Boy and the Heron. I've heard of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, I have.
Colin said, oh, I have. Elemental, a Pixar movie in the middle, kind of not getting the love. I'm going with Spider-Man because the first one won an Oscar too, and this one got more praise. So I'm assuming that I thought this was more of a lock that Spider-Man would win this.
Across the Spider-Verse made my top 10 list of best movies of the year. Like that should have been nominated for Best Picture. It is so good. But I'm going to go with Boy and the Heron.
Oh.
Jamie Drag Me, this movie is a Japanese animated movie, which she sold me on. Christian Bale and Mark Hamill do voices in it. And then we showed up and it was the subtitle version with none of them doing voices. I know the director who makes this. He's like, what's his name? Miyazaki
personally?
Or something. He's like the most acclaimed. He's Christopher Nolan level director, not even considering animation. So I'm going to go with Boy and the Heron.
Sure. All right. Cool.
But I loved Across Spider-Verse.
Still haven't seen it. The first one, meh.
And Casey loved Elemental.
Oh.
So if Casey has a vote, it's going to be Elemental.
Oh, Casey should have a vote. Best visual effects. I mean, you're happy for the favorite in this one. Godzilla Minus One, which I've still yet to see. The Creator, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Napoleon, which, I mean, that was an Oscar bait film that failed. We haven't talked about that. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Oh, first Oscar nomination for the Mission Impossible series.
Oh, nice. So in a year that the MCU got its first Razzie nomination. Where's our Razzie predictions? I'll let you go first because you've seen you've seen The Creator as well, have you?
Yeah, so I've seen everything but Napoleon on here.
Oh, you see all Napoleon. Ugh, Napoleon.
Oh, Oscar bait. I'm going with Godzilla Minus One. And also, just to add to that, Godzilla Minus One was the only movie last year I saw that came close to, like, Anatomy of a Fall levels of perfection. That is a movie that, like, it's a disgrace it didn't get nominated for Best Picture. It sounds crazy that a Godzilla movie should, but it should have. But the visual effects in that, so low budget, I don't know if it's, like, $30, $40 million, but it is, like, the greatest effects you've ever seen in a monster movie, and they did it on like $30 million.
And I'm pretty sure, like, weren't Japan, like, having, like, street celebrations that, like, this got nominated? Like, it was a big deal for them.
Yeah.
I never seen it, but I know the praise for it, and, yeah, I think it will win. I mean, I've seen Mission Impossible, great film. Visual effects, sure. Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah, sure. Napoleon, you know, little French man, cool.
Short
and Joaquin Phoenix. Best sound... I think, again, we know what's going to win this, but Oppenheimer, The Zone of Interest, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, and The Creator. Are we both on Oppenheimer here?
Yeah. Although, I mean, I guess this is another stacked category. Like, a lot of these, the most impressive thing about it was the sound. Like, The Creator, not a great movie, but incredible sound. And Zone of Interest, we talked about it a lot.
Yeah. But, you know, Oppenheimer will win that. This one might be tricky just because this is one of the ones that Barbie will win, but it's kind of like going over which of the songs will win it. Best song. So Barbie, What Was I Made For? Barbie, I'm Just Ken. American Symphony, It Never Went Away. Flamin' Hot, The Fire Inside and Kills a Flower Moon. Wazazi, A Song for My People. Apologies for butchering that pronunciation. Look, I think What Was I Made For is the obvious one that will win. But I love I'm Just Ken. That's like one of the few things I actually like about Barbie. I want I'm Just Ken to win, but they never give it to the quirky song. I mean, Blame Canada never won. Blame Canada should have won.
Hakuna Matata was the Lion King song that won, wasn't it?
No, Can You Feel the Love Tonight won.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think so. I'm right. So I don't think Hakuna Matata got nominated. I thought it was just Can You Feel the Love Tonight and Circle of Life.
They got like three nominations that year. I'm looking right now.
Can You Feel the Love Tonight won. I'll put money on it right now.
Sound original song. Oh, you're right. Can You Feel Love Tonight won, yeah.
Thank you.
But Hakuna Matata was nominated.
I was nominated. Okay, I apologize. But that's why I love when Blame Canada didn't win and now like Matt Stone and Trey Parker just always bag out Phil Collins for winning. Was it Phil Collins or Sting won that year? I think it was Phil Collins.
And it was Phil Collins, yeah.
And they always rip shit into Phil Collins for winning. I'm going to go for What Was I. I'm playing it safe. I'm sorry. I need to keep my crown of winning this bloody thing every year. But I think... it's not a bad song. Like, listening to it in the credits and, like, even though, again, it goes Change Your Lane, goes full serious on you. Like, it's... Yeah, like, I don't mind that song. So I'm sad that I'm Just Ken won't win. I think that's the only one that they're doing live as well. So, yeah.
I'm going to agree with you just because I don't want to take the gamble, although I feel like I might regret this because it could be I'm Just Ken.
I'm... Dua Lipa, robbed. Why wasn't she nominated? Best score, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, Poor Things, Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny, American Fiction. We should mention John Williams, oldest ever nominee, and I think he's now only about four behind Walt Disney in terms of the most nominated human being ever in the Oscars. Sad that he won't win another one for this, but yeah, Oppenheimer will win this.
There's not even a question about it.
Shitting it in.
Of all the ones John Williams keeps getting nominated for that he doesn't deserve, I'm glad Dial of Destiny, which is probably the best score he's done in, I don't know, 15, 20 years, that's actually getting some praise here.
And I just want to apologize to the technical people who we're not naming who are being nominated. We're just naming the film. So Ludwig Göransson is the person who did the score. Has he ever won anything before?
He was nominated for Black Panther.
He won for Black Panther.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, and he was nominated for Best Original Song for Black Panther last year. So, Ludwig did win for Black Panther. Actually, one of the few things about Black Panther that I'd agree with, that was a good score from Black Panther. One of the few MCU ones that I can probably actually remember if I think hard enough. Production design, Barbie, Poor Things, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon. Poor Things actually not that far behind Barbie in this one. So I'll let you go first.
I'm going to go with Poor Things.
I was going to do that if you went Barbie, but I'll go with Barbie. I was going to go whatever you said the opposite with, but I would not be disappointed if Poor Things won. Best makeup, hairstyling, Maestro, Poor Things, Oppenheimer, Society of the Snow, and Golda. But Poor Things, again, slightly behind Maestro. I feel like the obvious... I don't think you just want to vote for Maestro in anything. So I feel like if I go for Poor Things, you'll be forced into going for Maestro. But then, look, I'll let you take Poor Things and I'll go for Maestro then. I'll take the favorite.
I was going to say, I mean, I might end up regretting this, but I think Poor Things, my strategy, if I have any strategy at this point, is I am throwing a couple of odd votes on Poor Things because I know it might clean up with one of them.
So you're going for Poor Things? All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Film editing, do we even need to bother with this one?
No.
I mean, Oppenheimer, Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Poor Things, Holdovers. We know that Oppenheimer will win this one. So congratulations, Oppenheimer, for more awards. Costume design. Actually, again, another one that's closer than you think. So Barbie, Poor Things, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Napoleon. Poor Things only just behind Barbie. Again, please go first. Colin Hilding.
I think this one's going to go to Barbie.
All right. Well, I'm going to go for Poor Things just to change it up. Can't win everything, can I?
if the one where I don't take a chance on Poor Things, it ends up being the one that wins.
Another obvious one, cinematography, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, Poor Things, Maestro, El Con. I'm going to go for El Con. No, I'm not. I'm going for Oppenheimer. Are you going for Oppenheimer?
I'm actually thinking this is one of the categories where I have a feeling that it could be one of the things that Oppenheimer gets upset on. But I'm going to go safe on this one and pick Oppenheimer.
All right. Original screenplay. Dinner time. What's for dinner?
It's taco rice, which means we didn't have enough tacos left over, but we got to use up the rest of the taco stuff.
Nice. Original screenplay. So Anatomy of a Fall, favorite here. The Holdovers, second. Past Lives, Maestro. May, December. Oh, Natalie didn't get nominated. Which I still need to watch. I've heard to hear that Colin and Noah think it's good for a Natalie Portman movie. I should probably watch it. I mean, Anatomy of a Fall is the overwhelming favorite here. But, I mean, this is a tricky one because outside of Maestro, and again, you liked May, December, so apparently it's good. I mean, the top three we all liked. So I'll let you go first in this one. I feel like I'm stealing the thunder by always going first in a lot of these.
This is another one where I think it's maybe too close to call. I'm going to pick Anatomy of Fall because I feel like it has to win something, and that might be the only one it has a decent shot at.
And I'm going to do the same for The Holdovers because I feel it has to win something. And I mean, this is really it, isn't it? Between these two films, this might be the only one that either one of these wins. So, I mean, Anatomy of Fall looks to be quite ahead in the favorite ranks, but Holdovers are not too far behind. So we'll go for that one. Adapted screenplay. Again, this one's actually a lot closer than you think. So Oppenheimer, favorite, but only just above American Fiction. Barbie, third. Poor Things, and then The Zone of Interest. I want American Fiction to win an award, so I'm going to give it to this one. Did I steal your thunder there? I'm sorry, but American Fiction for the win here.
I mean, I was saying that I thought Barbie could win this because of the whole controversy, but I don't want to take a risk if you're already taking a risk, so I'm going to go safe with Oppenheimer.
That works. There you go. Is Greta Gerwig...
this could be another one that Poor Things could be in there for.
Is Greta Gerwig nominated for Adapted? Is that her award?
Well, she won it
and Noah
for
Baumbach. All right, okay, there you go.
She won it for Little Women, did she? I think she did.
Did she win it? Maybe, who knows? I don't pay attention. I'm a sexist, remember? only men should be nominated for awards. Ugh, women, put that on a soundboard. Best supporting actor, overwhelming favorite, Mr. RDJ. Ryan Gosling, Mark Ruffalo, Robert De Niro, and Sterling K. Brown. Aww. Give it to Sterling. No, Robert Downey's winning this.
Yeah, I really would love to see Mark Ruffalo win this.
Oh, he's crying.
Please, Ruffalo. No, it's going to be Robert Downey, which I'm more okay with than I think I was before rewatching this movie. It definitely improves the second time you watch it. And it's not just because you don't realize it's Robert Downey Jr. It's because, like Cillian Murphy, like he brings a really solid performance out of it.
And I think the second half is where he shines. So, no, I agree. And again, I think everyone's fine with Robert Downey Jr. being an Academy Award. It's a sentence we should be hearing. Academy Award winner Robert Downey Jr., right? This one, again, looking at the odds, pretty overwhelming for supporting actress. Divine, Joy Randolph, Emily Blunt, Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple, which that was another Oscar bait movie that I think kind of failed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
America Ferrera and Jodie Foster. Jodie! I keep forgetting you're nominated. Love you, Jodes. You can go first with this one.
It's not going to be Jodie, although I will say NIAID made my top 10 in the late year. It really deserved more nominations.
What's it about?
Yeah, I'm going with Divine. It's going to be Divine. I don't think that there's anybody else who comes close on this one.
What's NIAID about?
It almost fit in with Olympics because it's about a distance swimmer, endurance swimmer who retired and then like 30 years later when she's in her 60s decides she wants to swim the English Channel. Okay. And it's just attempt after attempt to happen over and over again.
All right. I might have to see it. No, I'm going with Divine as well. It's, I mean, overwhelming favorite. Best actor, Cillian Murphy, Paul Giamatti, Bradley Cooper, Jeffrey Wright, and Colman Domingo for Rustin. And apologies, Colman, we've not seen your movie. Maybe Colin has, I don't know. Is it a Rustin good time? I have no idea. I'm playing it safe. Cillian's going to win it. Is it Cillian or Killian? Which is it?
I think it's Killian.
Killian, all right. And again, I'm completely fine with him winning. I'm sad that Paul Giamatti won't win. Bradley Cooper should win an Oscar and will win an Oscar one day, hopefully. But I'm playing it safe. Cillian, Killian, Mr. Murphy. Murphy's son.
So this is the one where I think that it might be one of the upsets on Oppenheimer because I'm feeling very confident that I think it's going to be Giamatti and not Killian Murphy.
So you're going for him?
Yeah, like statistically, when you have a movie that sweeps everything in the Oscars, they typically don't want to give it every one of the big awards. So you often will get like the actor gets shafted or something. I also think that Paul Giamatti, he's never won an award before. I don't think he's ever won an Oscar.
He might have won like best spelling in year something. Six.
Yes. he won the spelling bee, yeah.
Principal award in high school. Most improved. But yeah.
I think that this could be Paul Giamatti's year, because when is he going to have another movie like this?
Let's get him on the show. Have you ever won any award? No, I've never won anything.
Have you ever won anything? Participation ribbon and track and field day?
Like a Razzie or something like that? I mean, I'd be happy. It reminds me of the year that I got really shitty when Eddie Murphy didn't win for Dreamgirls, was it? Because he was like the favorite, I think. But then What's-His-Face, who just sadly died recently, won it for Little Miss Sunshine. And I just, no one makes more of a deal of Eddie Murphy's face when they cut to him and he didn't win. Because apparently he stormed out. Apparently he walked out and was not happy. So, yeah, poor Eddie. Best actress, Emma Stone is apparently the favorite still. Lily Gladstone, Sandra Huller, Kerry Mulligan, and Annette Bening. I mean, I want you to go first with this one because, again, I'm torn. Because it's an obvious one that I feel is going to win it. But, like,
I think Lily's gonna take this. I think that she's the one thing about Killers of the Flower Moon that has enough momentum to actually get a win.
Look, I actually agree with you that she will win, but I'm gonna go for the upset here for Emma. I mean, I think, and this is not me trying to play that card, but I think there'd be more backlash with Lily Gladstone falling over at the last hurdle to not win the Oscar and then giving it to a white woman. So like, I think there would be more backlash with that. But you going for an upset in one of the acting categories? I'll go for it as well. So. That's very close. Like, looking at the odds here, like, so you have the top choice and the odds section, and America does odds differently to what Australia does. So I don't know how to read the odds in terms of how that happens with Americans. But top choice, 2,941 for Emma Stone, Lily Gladstone, 3,068. So that's what, like, 120 difference. Whereas most of these, you're looking at 1,000 difference, 2,000 difference. So that's got to be the closest now, there.
I think you've already said that Emma Stone was your favorite in this category, but like Sandra Huller, or does she have any shot? Because to me, she is maybe the best acting performance the entire year.
I would say that if I had to award it personally, I probably would give it to Sandra Huller still. Because again, she carries that movie like no one else does in any of these, even Cillian Murphy, I would argue. But I just think that she doesn't have the chance, just because, again, if she was in an American movie, maybe, but like when you're up against like a Martin Scorsese film, and then you've got like Emma Stone who's already won an Oscar. Like you're not, you know, what was it? The Italian dude who won, Roberto Benigni.
Roberto Benigni.
Like, I mean, was he even in that conversation and came out of nowhere to win in an Italian movie? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, whereas this, it's like, yeah, if this was maybe an American, but if this is a Christopher Nolan film, then yeah, she's going to be winning. But, and that's why I feel bad for her, because yeah, if you look at these five, and again, I'm not seeing Nyad, so I don't know how Annette Bening was, but she's the standout by far. So, you know, but yeah, I don't think she's got a chance, sadly. Sorry, Sandra. Best director, Christopher Nolan, Yorgos Lanthimos, Jonathan Glazer, Justine Triet, and Martin Scorsese. If you want an overwhelming favorite, look at Christopher Nolan, because he has 6,017 on the top choice versus 77 for Yorgos in second. This is a safe bet for Nolan, right?
Yeah, neither of us are going to take a gamble, I don't think, on this or picture.
Nah, yeah, I'm the same with you for best bet. I mean, again, overwhelming Oppenheimer, way, way ahead. So, obviously, let's go over these one more time. We've just covered them for the last 10 days. Oppenheimer, The Holdovers, Poor Things, Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of Flower Moon, Barbie, American Fiction, Zone of Interest, Maestro, and Past Lives. That is actually also the order in which they are favorite to least favorite. But, yes, Oppenheimer will win best picture. So, Christopher Nolan will be a two-time Academy Award winner at the end of this night. Is he in the adapted screenplay as well? He is. Could be a three-time Academy Award winner at the end of the night. So there you go. And who else will win Best Producer alongside of him? Emma Thomas and Charles Roven. Have either of them won Oscars before? Do we know? Emma Thomas?
Christopher Nolan's wife. Produce his movies.
Did you know that?
They produced The Man of Steel. Did The Man of Steel win Best Picture?
Sadly not. So this is her third nomination for Emma. It would be her first win. And it looks likely to be the same for Mr. Roven. Was nominated for American Hustle. And this is only his second nomination. So he also was a producer on The Suicide Squad. And Justice, he's done a lot of DC movies. So we did Suicide Squad, Zack Snyder's Justice League, Wonder Woman 84, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Can we just point out the guy who was a producer on Batman, Dawn of Justice, Superman could win an Oscar? In your face, haters!
But does Christopher Nolan get that too? Because again, the reason Charles Roven came on to DC was because Christopher Nolan
probably
kickstart it with Man of Steel. So maybe Christopher Nolan produced Suicide Squad or had a credit maybe. On that. Who knows?
But anyway, it's been a fun year. We've gotten through this pretty quickly, so I'm glad. Another year done. And
we've gotten through this in about the same amount of time we get through it every year, 10 days.
I just got to quickly, like, I think this is when we discovered Brendan Fraser was up for an award. So I'm just going to randomly pull up an article. I'm pulling up 2025 Oscars, 97 Academy Award winner predictions from Hailstorm 3 on IMDb. So this is an IMDb user's early predictions. I have no idea what these are. So we've got number one is Megalopolis. An architect wants to rebuild New York City in a utopia following a devastating disaster. So who's in that film?
That's Francis Ford Coppola's comeback movie with Adam Driver.
Oh, Adam Driver. Shia LaBeouf. Mm-hmm. Jason Schwartzman in that. Giancarlo Esposito could be an Oscar nominee. He deserves one. Forrest Whitaker. This is a stacked cast. Dustin Hoffman. John Voight. Wasn't he cancelled? But good for him. Mickey 17. To stop his substitute clone Mickey 8 from supplanting him, Mickey 7, an expendable robot, is dispatched to an icy planet. So who are we looking for in that movie? Potentially, it's directed by Bong Joon-ho, Mark Ruffalo, Robert Pattinson, Tony Collette. There you go. Some people in that one. That's usually how movies work, Ben. There are people in them. Joker.
Steven Yeun.
Folly Adieu. So Todd Phillips, obviously, Lady Gaga, Joaquin Phoenix, it's going to be an interesting one, that one. I'm on board to Lady Gaga getting an acting Oscar. I'm just going to do the top five here. I'm not going through all of these. Long Day's Journey into Night, directed by Jonathan Kent, starring Jessica Lange. Oh, my woman. Ed Harris is in that one. Ed Harris has been nominated, but he's never won, right?
Yeah, I think the last time he was nominated was History of Violence, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, Jessica Lange is what? She's a two-time Oscar winner, isn't she? And thoroughly, isn't
she? Yeah, she won it, I think, once in the 80s and one in the 90s, maybe?
Yeah, I think she's a two. I mean, I fell in love with her in everything American Horror Story. She's an amazing actress. And Gladiator 2, which we're all skeptical about. Ridley Scott, but I mean, Pedro Pascal, Academy Award winner. Come on! We're talking about him and Giancarlo Esposito, Joseph Quinn. Denzel Washington's in that. I keep forgetting. Connie Nielsen!
Well, she was in the first. She's alive.
True.
You got to bring her back.
Matt Lucas could be an Academy Award winner. I mean, Little Britain's Matt Lucas. Who knows? Anyway, so I don't know if you've got any other movies that you think will be on the... It's very early days. There's an Angelina Jolie movie here, apparently.
Dune Part 1 got Best Picture. It got a ton of nominations, including Best Director. And Part 2 is supposed to be even better. And by the time you're listening to this episode, we probably have seen it already. Or I've at least seen it. So I'm going to say Dune Part 2.
I'm just scrolling through. There's a movie called Will and Harper. It's a documentary with Will Ferrell in it. That's on there. There's a movie called O Canada. Leonard Fife, one of 60,000 draft invaders and deserters who fled to Canada to avoid serving in Vietnam, shares all his secrets to demythologize his mythologized life.
Finally, you make a movie about Canada and it's got to be about American. This is like white savior of Canadian films.
There's another Cillian Murphy movie on this list, another Emma Stone movie on this list. So your usual ones are there, but again, very early days. So we'll see how that
plays. What does Eddie Murphy have coming out this year?
Oh, probably like Norbit 4. Isn't Beverly Hills Cop? Isn't there a new Beverly Hills?
Oh, yeah.
I saw the trailer.
Axel Foley.
And Kevin Bacon's in that movie. Did you know that?
Judge Reinhold's back.
Yeah, he's in it. I didn't even realize that. Like, got to a point where they released a trailer of it, and I was randomly watching like trailers the other day. I'm like, oh, is this real or is this a fan made one? Like, Kevin Bacon's in this, but I think it's direct to Netflix though. So anyway, like, subscribe, do all the things. 24, we've got Ghostbusters month. Are we doing Razzies month? Your tip for Razzie? Should we just look at that quickly?
Which children did they nominate this year?
Yeah, God, come on. Who are the nominees? I think Ant-Man got nominated, didn't it? Which all the Marvel, that wasn't the worst Marvel movie last year. Worst Picture, Exorcist, Believer, Expendables 4, Meg 2, The Trench. Meg 2, The Trench should win.
Exorcist, seen it. Believer.
The first one was shit. Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Come on, no. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. I'm giving it to Meg 2 because that movie, the first one, sucked.
I saw Exorcist Believer, and I'm telling you, there is no good left in this world if that movie doesn't win Worst Picture.
Oh, Ana de Armas got nominated for Worst Actress. Boo.
She for Blonde a couple years ago too. She got the Oscar and the Razzie in the same year.
Kim Cattrall got nominated. Oh, poor Mel Gibson's been nominated. Sylvester Stallone been nominated.
This is all new.
Worst screen combo, worst remake, ripoff, or sequel. Indiana Jones got nominated. Yeah, it wasn't that bad. Yeah, I don't know. Not seen many of these. Expendables 4 got 7 nominations, so can it sweep? And I'm interested to see who will get the Razzie Redeemer Award. Did Brendan Fraser win it last year? If not, he should win it for this year. Colin Farrell won it last year. Will Smith won it the year before. Yeah, anyway. Eddie Murphy did win it.
Whoa, I bet they're regretting that one now.
Probably. Like, subscribe, do all the things, and listen, and all that kind of stuff. My name is Ben, and bomb.
And my name is Colin, and kablammo!
Thanks for downloading this episode of the Oz Network. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or by copying our RSS feed into your preferred podcast provider. And while you're there, please drop us a rating and leave us some feedback. You can also be sure to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and happenings from the show, as well as finding out how you can get involved in upcoming episodes by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as getting everything you need under one roof at theoznetwork.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you next time. Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favorite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah.
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon. That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made.